This week we will wrap up our study of the seemingly random assortment of Solomon's Proverbs appearing in Proverbs 10 through 29. I include in that Solomon's first course of Proverbs and his second course recorded by Hezekiah's men. Note, however, that this does not include the sayings of the wise from Proverbs 22:17 through 24:34. We'll get on to that next week. This week's topic of consideration is going to be the roundup of all those verses that didn't really fit anywhere else. We have a few dozen of them. We'll talk about the glory of an old man's gray hairs, disciplining one's servants, the seven abominations, taking care of animals, and the sweetness of honey, among other varied topics. As with previous weeks, you have no particular passage for consideration, and I will cite the verses as I come to them. We start off our discussion with three verses about honey. Honey was the sweetest thing that anyone had to eat in Bible times. Because of this extreme nature of honey, it was used to make a comparison of relative circumstances. For example, in Proverbs 27:7, we read, "One who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry, everything bitter is sweet." The point here is that even though honey is extremely tasty, a full person doesn't want any of it. Even the best thing is not so good if you've got too much of it. In contrast, if you're really hungry, then anything that fills your belly tastes great. Our desires for things and the value of those things are all relative to our needs. There is a certain supply and demand effect. In response to that, we should try to live life with a little moderation. It is possible to get too much of a good thing. Proverbs 25:16 says, "If you have found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it." And that brings us around to chapter 25, verse 27, which says in the ESV, "To eat honey too much is not good, and to seek out glory is glorious." I found that one to be a little odd, so I looked it up in Hebrew, and I came up with this translation. "To eat much honey is not good, but seeking a glorious word is necessary." The intent there, I think, is that much as it is not good to eat too much honey, it is not good to speak too highly of oneself, or to seek too much praise from others, though one might need to ask for a little praise from time to time. I have two verses next about graying hair. Unfortunately, we live in a culture that predominantly values youth. Young people buy things, so marketers want to sell to them, which means that media is often directed at them. And of course, sex sells, so young and attractive people are great for marketing. Getting old in a fallen world wears out the body, and gray hair is a common symptom of that. Old age always eventually ends in death. Many modern folks will try to dye their hair then to cover up the gray. And yet the Proverbs speak highly of gray hair. Proverbs 16:31 says, "Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life." Now, many people will live to an old age regardless of their righteousness, but as we have discussed, those who live rightly are more likely to live long. A gray head of hair doesn't sit on a person who hasn't experienced a thing or two, and whether or not they have learned the hard way, older people likely have learned at least something. So there is glory in surviving to old age. Proverbs 10:29 carries a similar idea. "The glory of young men is their strength, but the splendor of old men is their gray hair." That gray hair, I think, is a representation of wisdom. The young man has the strength to work hard, but the old man knows how to plan and to manage. He knows the books and the tricks of the trade. He may not lift things as well as he once did, but he does know how to get the job done, and there's much you can learn from him. We have in Proverbs 29 a couple of verses that concern servants. Proverbs 29:19 says, "By mere words a servant is not disciplined, for though he understands, he will not respond." The word here for a servant is the Hebrew ebed. It could describe either a slave, someone like a criminal sold into performing labor to pay off a debt, or an employee, someone working for a wage. Whether this is a slave or an employee, the proverb tells us that a subordinate won't change his behavior based on his words alone. the boss says do better, and most workers will just shrug and get back to doing it however he wants. The key to getting people to do things is not to just tell them to do them. People act at the intersection of ease and motivation. The easier something is, the more likely the person is to do it. And the more motivated the person is to do something, the more likely he is to do it. Harder tasks require greater motivators, and easier tasks, lesser ones. People are not motivated to accomplish difficult tasks by words alone. People are motivated by rewards or punishments. Rewards tend to be better motivators than punishments are. For example, no one wants to go to work, but if there is enough money as a reward to motivate him, then he will. People will work under the punishment of a whip also, but they will work with less eagerness. The point is this: if you want people to do something, you can't just tell them to do it and expect them to follow through, even if that person is a servant who is duty-bound to comply. Proverbs 29:21 says, "Whoever pampers his servant from childhood will in the end find him his heir." The intent of this psalm is unclear to me. It could be suggesting that pampering a servant is a good thing. He shows up to work when he is young, and if you take good care of him, then he'll still be by your side like your own son when you are old. Or perhaps it suggests that pampering is a bad thing. If you give the servant whatever he wants without keeping him in line, then it won't be long before he's taken you for everything that you have. Of course, the psalm might be unclear because the meaning of one of the words is not certainly known. The ESV provides us with a helpful footnote, which says, "The meaning of the Hebrew word rendered his heir is uncertain, so perhaps this means something else entirely." There is only one instance of this word in the Bible, so we don't have much to compare it with. Whatever the intent of the proverb is, it is probably best to take a moderate road. Give your workers what they need to be comfortable and to get the job done well, but also don't give them any and everything they might want. Dipping out of Proverbs 10 through 29, which has been the bulk of our concern, we have in Proverbs 6 through 19, a list of seven abominations. It reads, "There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers." So we have a list of seven abominable things. These are generally in keeping with what we've seen about wisdom elsewhere. We determined early on that obedience to God's laws is the first part of being wise, and hands that shed innocent blood are certainly acting in opposition to the moral law. Being wicked or evil also describes opposition to God's laws. So a person who devises wicked plans or runs toward evil would describe an unrighteous and thus unwise person, as we have discussed previously. So also are a lying tongue and a false witness. We discussed both of those things in our message on honesty, which was also prominent in our list of wise practices. There are two other things on the list that we have not seen with much clarity before. The first is having haughty eyes, what the KJV translates as a proud look. Most literally, this might be translated high eyes. It describes, I think, those who think of themselves as being better than others and thus overlook others as if they do not matter. Thinking yourself too good to be concerned with the needs of others is unwise. The second is sowing discord among brothers. This would suggest someone who goes out to stir up trouble where there ought not to be any. I have two verses which are loosely connected by a theme of hatred and violence. Proverbs 10:12 says, "Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses." Obviously, when people hate each other, or even just when one party hates the other, there will be strife between them. In fact, this is one way that you can recognize hate. If a person is instigating strife, that person is probably a hater. Love, on the other hand, will be resolving strife. Proverbs 16:29 says, "A man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good." I would think that in order to be described as a man of violence, a person would have to be one who is prone to engaging in unjustified violence. For example, a man who kills an intruder into his home has done a violent thing. but he is not a man of violence. A person who goes out robbing people on the street at gunpoint would better fit the definition. That kind of person might seek out recruits to help him do dirty work. Well, by definition, doing that kind of dirty work is not good, so don't join in on those kinds of things. And then we come to the loose ends, verses that have no strong connection to each other or to anything else. I've got more than a dozen of these, presented in order of appearance in the text. First, Proverbs 12:10. Whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast, but the mercy of the wicked is cruel. That seems pretty straightforward. The Bible obviously isn't keen on the idea of animals having rights on par with humans. We need look no farther than the carnivorous diet or animal sacrifices depicted in the Torah to know that. But in general, it is good to take into account the well-being of animals, particularly those which are in our care, if for no other reason than that we benefit from keeping them in good condition. But beyond concerns of our own self-interest, animals do feel pain and fear, and there is too much pain and fear in the world. If we can reasonably avoid creating more of it, then we should. Next, Proverbs 19:2. Desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. If you want to be wise, then don't rush into things. Something might look good, but end up being very, very bad. Proverbs 20, verse 5. The purpose of a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. Motivations often are irrelevant. Unless there is some justification like self-defense, why one person kills another one matters much less than the fact that he did do it. But that aside, motivations are also very difficult to determine. People lie about their motives, and it is rare to have complete evidence that shows a person's motives. In general, then, we should judge people by their actions, not by their motivations, and we should give them the benefit of the doubt, presuming, even when they perform badly, that their intentions were good. This proverb suggests that with wisdom a motivation can be drawn out, and I don't doubt that, but use caution in doing so. Those are deep waters, and you would prefer not to drown in them. Proverbs 20, verse 9. Who can say, I have made my heart pure, I am clean from my sin? That's a good question, to which the answer is, no one but God alone. We are all sinners. Proverbs 20:14. Bad, bad, says the buyer, but when he goes away, then he boasts. This, I suppose, is an example of dishonest speech, but it is how negotiations have worked for all of human history, I suppose. The buyer haggles, saying that the price is too high because there is a tiny scratch on the car. But then, when the seller lowers the price to accommodate for the scratch, the buyer brags about how he got it for a steal. Such is life, I suppose. Proverbs 20:22. Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will deliver you. I take it that to repay evil would mean to go outside of God's moral system of justice and to act contrary to his laws in an effort to penalize those whom you believe to be in the wrong. It is wrong to do that. God's laws are set up to give us justice, and while they may not always give us exactly what we want immediately, God will ultimately do justice, if not in this life, then in the next. You should keep the laws and do justice within the laws. Proverbs 20:25. It is a snare to say rashly, it is holy, and to reflect only after making vows. This is a reference to the sacrificial system. If a person had, for example, an animal and vowed to offer that animal as a sacrifice, saying that the animal was holy, then he would be duty-bound to offer that animal as a sacrifice. This could be a bad decision, though. Livestock or produce or whatever the thing to be offered was is valuable, and if a person rashly vowed to offer that value only to realize later that he couldn't afford the offering, then he would be in trouble. Some offerings were mandatory, but others were not, and so it was wise to not make the vow until the offerer was fully prepared to follow through. This particular situation is somewhat removed from modern life, but the idea behind it, that we should not leap into commitments if we aren't ready for them, is still valuable. Proverbs 20:27. The spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, searching all his innermost parts. That one is a bit confusing for me. Clearly God can see all of our innermost parts, we know that. He can see our thoughts, our emotions, etc. And I suppose that's the important part of the verse. But I'm not entirely clear on how a man's spirit is like God's lamp, as if he somehow uses our spirit as a tool to see into the dark corners of our minds. In fact, I would suppose that our spirit is our mind. Whether this is just a confusing analogy or some mystery of the spirit, I can't say, but here's the point. God knows what's going on inside your head. Proverbs 20:30. Blows that wound cleanse away evil. Strokes make clean the innermost parts. Now again, we want to be cautious with this one. It shouldn't be read as a justification to just go out and beat up anyone that we might feel like beating up. Blows cleanse evil. This implies that blows are justified when there is some kind of evil act. Obviously, within the family, there is a natural authority structure which, for instance, allows a parent to discipline a child with blows, but outside of the family structure, blows should be reserved for a person who violates the law in such a way as to deserve blows. And those blows should only be given with judicial authority derived from the scriptures. And yes, the law of Moses does justify beatings as a form of punishment. See, for example, Deuteronomy 25, 1-3. This proverb tells us that, in such justified cases, beatings were effective at deterring criminals from committing future crimes. Proverbs 27:18. Whoever tends a fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who guards his master will be honored. This verse compares the master, or the boss, to a fig tree. As the fig tree produces wealth in the form of fruit, the boss is running a business and producing good things. As a man gets good things from the tree when he benefits it, so the worker gets good things when he does beneficial work for the boss. Proverbs 27:21. The crucible is for silver, and the furnace is for gold, and a man is tested by his praise. I'm not entirely sure what this one means. I suppose it intends that when a man receives praise, what he does with that demonstrates his character. Some people accept praise with humility, others with conceit. That seems to be a weak point to make, to me, though. Another idea might be that as the crucible purifies silver, so a man purifies praise for himself, as in he tries to make people say good things about him, or perhaps that the things that he does, whether good or bad, determine whether or not he receives or is worthy of praise. It is, in my mind, generally unclear. Proverbs 29:13 says, "The poor man and the oppressor meet together. Jehovah gives light to the eyes of both." This one, I suppose, speaks to the inherent value of human life. God gives us life, here poetically referred to as light to the eyes, and whether the person is the powerful oppressor or the weak oppressed, both of them have inherent value in the sight of God. Proverbs 29:18. Where there is no prophetic vision, the people cast off restraint, but blessed is he who keeps the law. People tend to obey God in times when there is some great sign for them that they ought to do so. If people hear from a prophet and they see him performing miracles to prove his message, they obey. But when there is no such prophet, they are more likely to ignore God and his word. The people cast off the restraints of the law and they disobey. You are better off, however, to keep God's laws whether or not you've been told to do so by some prophet. You have the book. That's all you need. Proverbs 29:24 says, "The partner of a thief hates his own life. He hears the curse, but discloses nothing." Saying nothing when there is something important to be said is comparable to bearing false witness, because incomplete information can be as harmful as false information. Just courts depend on having all of the facts to conduct their work, and God's people are obligated to respond to God's courts. Leviticus 5:1 speaks to this. If anyone sins in that he hears a public adjuration to testify, and though he is a witness, whether he has seen or come to know the matter, yet does not speak, he shall bear his iniquity. So when a legitimate Christian court convenes and calls for witnesses, you should respond. Otherwise, the guilt of the matter falls on your own head. That demonstrates a hatred of your own life. Proverbs 29:25. The fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. God is all-powerful. He can protect you from the schemes of man. If you fear men more than you trust God, then you will demonstrate that by doing the things that men want you to do to avoid their wrath, rather than doing the things that God wants you to do. But if you do that, then it will be a snare for you, because the things that God wants you to do will be better than the things that man wants you to do. Don't fall into the trap. Obey God rather than men. To conclude then, this has been a listing of odds and ends proverbs that didn't fit well elsewhere, and our study of it concludes our study of the first and second courses of Solomon's Proverbs contained in Proverbs 10 through 29. However, this isn't everything in those chapters. Nestled between the two courses of Proverbs are the sayings of the wise in Proverbs 22, 17 through 24, 34. We'll look over those next week. After that, I expect that we will have two more weeks of messages on the words of Agur and the words of Lemuel to finish out the book of Proverbs. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.